Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and all this week, WNYC's school book is exploring solutions to segregation in New York City schools. And today and Thursday, we'll partake in this discussion on this show. I'm joined now by Christopher Emden from Columbia University's Teachers College, creator of the Hip Hop Ed Twitter movement and what he calls Science Genius Battles. And now he's the author of a book called For White Folks Who Teach in the Hood and the Rest of Y'all Too, Reality, Pedagogy, and Urban Education. The reality is many schools have black student populations and white teaching populations. And in his book, Christopher Emden writes that in order for white teachers to effectively educate black students who live in areas very different from theirs, it, quote, requires a new approach to teaching that embraces the complexity of place, space, and the collective impact on the psyche of urban youth. So, Christopher Emden, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, great to be here with you.
And we'll open up the phones for anybody, but particularly if anybody's listening or who is or has been a white teacher in a classroom of predominantly black students, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Why did you write this book?
I wrote this book because I, as a researcher, was in schools across New York City, across the country actually, that were populated by urban youth of color, who mostly had white teachers, and just witnessed dysfunction. I witnessed teachers not being able to understand the cues that the students were giving them. I witnessed a misunderstanding of the culture of the young people. And most importantly, I witnessed the impact of these cultural divides on the educational outcomes, on the students' success, and their ability to do well academically. And it got to the point of being so frustrated with the status quo in teaching and learning, where teachers were given standards and they were given, you know, teacher prep courses and they were given books to read that had nothing to do with how to be impactful with the population they were teaching. And I had to sort of intervene somehow, and I did so through this book.
Can you give us one story as a really good example and maybe how training could mitigate the problem?
I remember one instance that I write about in the book where there was a young woman, a young lady in a class who was told that she was late, unprepared, and not paying attention in class. And she was doing this repetitively. It got to the point where it was an issue for the teacher. She was taken to the principal's office. So the principal has a meeting with the student, the teacher, myself, and the suspension coordinator to talk about what she can do to mitigate this behavior. And it eventually ended up that the student was going to be suspended. And the student was so adamant about the fact that she was on time, she was not unprepared, and she was ready to learn. And it was like, someone has to be lying. How can the teacher be so passionate about the fact that you are disrupting her class and doing all these awful things, and you believe you're not? And at the end of the day, it really was that they just couldn't understand each other's languages. For the student, standing at the door meant she was prepared. Being able to ask a peer for a pen or a paper or a pencil means that she was ready to learn. Asking questions, although loud and sometimes boisterous, meant that she wanted to be engaged. And the teacher read all those things as disengagement. And so it got to the point where it was so awful for the teacher that she wanted to suspend the very child who's actually the most interested in the teaching and learning. So there are these cultural cues that folks just aren't reading, and that if we continue to sort of exist in spaces where people are speaking different languages, it's going to impact our ability to help these young people to be more successful.
And can that bridge, can that divide be bridged? Can white teachers, well-meaning, going into education and into urban education because that's what they want to do, that's where they feel they're calling, but, you know, they come from the suburbs, they come from an upper middle class background, wherever they come from. Is this something that can be bridged?
Absolutely can be. And this is why I wrote the book. So the book is filled with, you know, sort of describing the larger landscape of urban education, but it also offers these tools, these suggestions, these approaches to teaching and learning to help educators who are well-intentioned to be more successful. Basic things like what I call a co-generative dialogue that has teachers engaging in conversations with students about how they're experiencing the classroom outside of the classroom, where the students co-construct with the teacher the best approaches to be effective. I talk about the concept called Pentecostal pedagogy, which essentially takes cues for teaching and learning for places like the black church or places like the barbershop, where young people are engaged on a regular basis in ways that meet them on their own cultural turf, and how a teacher can incorporate some of these strategies into their own teaching and learning. I talk about co-teaching, where students will be identified as those who can lead the instruction, literally giving the teacher models for how to teach effectively. I talk about creating a coalition with folks who are outside of the community who can come in and supplement the teacher's instruction. So, you know, the book is filled with techniques. It's filled with approaches. My framework is called reality pedagogy, which essentially means teaching the teacher to understand the realities of the students, and most importantly, not sacrificing the academic rigor in the process of being culturally responsive. And I feel as though, you know, in the world of education, we fail to have this conversation. I say when you go into a classroom that's operating well, it feels like magic, but magic can be taught. You know, no magician is just really a wizard. Magicians are those folks who have perfected these magic tricks that give the illusion that they are really blowing your mind. And I feel like, you know, through the ideas that are put forth in this book, we can give well-intentioned educators the magic tricks to create magic in their classroom.
Christopher Emden, my guest from the Columbia University Teachers College and author now of For White Folks Who Teach in the Hood and the Rest of Y'all Too, Reality Pedagogy and Urban Education. And Bill in Nassau County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to mention I lived in the suburbs and I taught in the inner city. The school I taught at was exclusively made up of students who were of color, and I just had a very different experience than my colleagues who were people of color as well. Their approach was quite often from day one, from moment one, to gain respect through fear. And my approach was much more gentle, much more strength-based, much more, what shall we say, we're going to get through this together and we're going to do the best job we can. And the students were really taken aback by that. They weren't used to that. And they would often tell me, you know, you have to be much stronger. You have to be much more strict. People are taking advantage of you. But what I found out is I had a struggle for the first few months. But then once my students realized I cared about them genuinely, I was there for them, I believed in them, then I think they trusted me and they really, they bought into education.
Bill, yeah. Let me get a response for you from Professor Emden. He's got a couple of constructs out there. One is tough love approach versus a gentler connection. One is caring is enough. You know, if they think you care about them, then they're going to come around to being productive. What do you think of either of those narratives?
As Bill described his experiences, it rang true to me. And I wanted to thank Bill for sticking to his approach, which focused on building community with students. And I want to also keep in mind that the title of my book is For White Folks Who Teach in the Hood and the Rest of Y'all Too. And the Rest of Y'all Too that I'm discussing here are black and brown teachers who work in urban spaces of wealth, who themselves approach pedagogy through a very sort of like criminal lens or through a fear-based lens. So I am critiquing the kind of instruction that Bill is saying his colleagues were implementing, and I think that is problematic as well.
And I see. Go ahead.
And so what Bill is describing here is interesting, right? So he's talking about the fact that he had challenges initially by focusing on a community-based working with students approach to teaching and learning while his colleagues focused on fear. In the book, I write about the fact that the reason why teachers of color oftentimes teach with this sort of fear-based approach first is because that's how they've been taught. And a student will initially feel as though a person who's teaching with fear is a person that they should be intimidated by, but those students aren't learning. Listen, the issue in urban education is this. A teacher can teach based on a fear-based narrative and feel as though I'm getting the kids to sit down quietly, but those students are still underperforming at the end of the academic year. I make the argument that an instructor who uses Bill's approach and uses some of the constructs that I describe in this work will be able to have results at the end of the year and have students understand that there's power and beauty and joy in learning. So a fear-based approach only creates more fear, and that fear never leads to joy. And we all know that joy in the classroom leads to academic success.
Robert in Lake Hopatcong, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great to have you.
Never really had too many discipline issues because the approach that I've taken is you do kind of a hybrid of the teach by fear to make sure that you're a tough teacher, but also to make sure that you nurture the learning. but I kind of minimized any discipline issues by walking in like the Godfather because of the minorities in there from Haiti. There was a significant population. They specifically reacted to a walk in the room and your presence is known. And we were able to get through a lot more in that year than a lot of my other colleagues in the chemistry classroom that I was in by doing that.
Robert, thank you very much. Well, what do you think of that, Chris? And, you know, even he's drawing a distinction between a particular nationality immigrant group and maybe some others, that Haitians were more influenced by walking in with a big presence in the room. I don't know if you have a thought about that in particular or whether in general, if you have different immigrant groups, let's say, in your classroom, to know some particulars, whatever they are.
Yeah, so one of the arguments that I make throughout the book is that the best teachers make themselves malleable enough to be reflective of the type of pedagogy or teaching and learning that their students need. So I don't make the argument that I am providing you guys with the perfect formula of effective teaching. I am providing the world with a strategy to help, which is a larger sort of standardized strategy that will help them to be able to get the best teaching for their own particular students. For example, when I talk about having dialogues with young people, if you have a Haitian American student and a Dominican American student in an urban classroom, by virtue of being from Haiti and the Dominican Republic, there are certain things that those students bring into the classroom, their relationships with each other, that will impact the teaching and learning. If as a teacher I can identify the Haitian student, the Dominican student, the African American student, the Puerto Rican student, and have conversations with them about an approach to teaching that merges each of their own cultural traditions so that we could co-construct a culture for our own classroom that meets our collective needs, we're more effective. See, so one of my arguments here is that the hyper-standardization of teaching and learning is the most problematic thing that has happened to urban education because teaching and learning is a very localized exercise. Meaning a teacher who is successful on 145th Street in Manhattan may be completely ineffective in Newark, New Jersey. And we describe any students as a monolith of sort of urban students, but in reality, the teacher has to be able to understand the nuances and the specifics of Newark, New Jersey, and of 145th Street. That requires a set of strategies to be able to pull forth the kind of teaching and learning that's needed for that group. Now, if you hyper-standardize teaching and learning, you hyper-standardize curriculum, you hyper-standardize approaches, then there's no room for the teachers to be able to make themselves malleable to meet the specific needs of their students. Mm-hmm. So for those Haitian students, there's a very particular pedagogy that needs to be implemented. For the African American students, is a particular pedagogy that has to be implemented. In a classroom that has them both together, there has to be an approach that's implemented. And that approach can only come by creating the space for those young people to inform the teacher on what works best for them.
Really interesting. So in our last minute, the context of this interview, this appearance of you on the show is, you know, that the WNYC newsroom is talking about our segregated New York City schools in various ways all this week and on our schoolbook.org website. Does any of what you write about matter to desegregation and integration or only to effective teaching in our segregated world and segregated city?
Well, this argument I make, and I make this point throughout the book as well, is that, yes, the schools are more segregated today than they've ever been before. But here's the piece that we're all missing. The argument should not be about us being deliberate about reintegrating schools. I think it's a larger ideal, and I think it's a great thing to do, but I think it's the wrong focus. What has happened is that we have segregated schools, but we have a very sort of integration pedagogy for everyone. I'll give you an example. The point in time in our collective history in the United States where the populations who are underperforming on standardized exams were performing on the highest levels were actually pre-integration. I'm not making an argument for segregation. I'm just saying that that's when they were the most academically successful. So then we integrated schools, but in our integration process, we never integrated the curriculum. So we're integrating schools, but using very specific pedagogical strategies for all students. And so that's when you started finding youth of color who begin underperforming. Their underperformance was not a reflection of the integration process. It was a reflection of the fact that in these integrated schools, the approaches to teaching and learning were different from the ways that they were successful in their segregated schools.
Wow.
Now, in 2016, we have resegregated schools, but we have integration pedagogy. So an integration pedagogy in segregated schools will not work. So the argument I'm making here is this. It's probably close to impossible in a contemporary era to reintegrate schools because folks who don't want to be with black and brown folks or don't want to be around white folks won't be.
And
what we need to focus on is changing the teaching and learning.
Chris, Christopher Emden's book is For White Folks Who Teach in the Hood and the Rest of Y'all Too, Reality, Pedagogy, and Urban Education. He'll be appearing tonight at the Greenlight Bookstore, Fulton Street in Brooklyn, 7:30 p.m. Free, but RSVPs are required. And the context of this is all this week, School Book is talking about our segregated New York City schools. Go to schoolbook.org for the whole body of work. Christopher Emden, thank you very much.
Pleasure to be here with you.
Schoolbook.org for the whole body of work. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.